Today on Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, a young person reveals how loving the old will change your life.
Older adults are living their life and they are just not seeing that each day that they have is a gift. And I think as young adults, we're not seeing that we need to value them and remind them how valuable they are.
Welcome to Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. Today, a hope-filled, love-filled conversation with Isabel Tom about the value of our older family members. Her book comes partly from her own experience of growing up with grandparents. You can find it at fivelovelanguages.com. The title is The Value of Wrinkles, A Young Perspective on How Loving the Old Will Change Your Life.
You can find it at fivelovelanguages.com. And Gary, this topic is getting closer and closer to my heart every day because I'm moving into the older age bracket. How about you?
It's closer to my heart, Chris, because I'm a lot older than you. I am fascinated with this topic. In fact, when I read the topic there, The Value of Wrinkles, I thought, oh, man, this is a good book.
You don't wrinkle, though. You don't have any wrinkles, Gary. What is that? Is that your DNA?
Oh, I don't know. I guess so. It's part of that's just genetic. But, You know, yeah, this is a topic I think that both younger people need to hear as well as those of us who are older. So I'm excited about the conversation today.
It'll be a lot of fun. Because there are some memories as we were preparing for this, some memories of my grandfather who came to live with us and visiting my grandmother. She lived alone, but her two of her sons lived with her. And, you know, some of these things just kind of percolated, and I thought, wow, this is such a great topic. So let me introduce you to author and speaker Isabel Tom. She is passionate about serving the older adult population. Between growing up in an intergenerational household and working in the field of aging, Isabel has more than 35 years' experience with older adults. Her grandparents, who lived until they were 98 and 102 years old, had a profound impact on her. Professionally, she has more than a decade of experience working with healthcare organizations. She and her husband, Kevin, have three children. You can find out more about our featured resource at the website, fivelovelanguages.com. It's Isabel's book, The Value of Wrinkles, A Young Perspective on How Loving the Old Will Change Your Life. Again, go to fivelovelanguages.com.
Well, Isabel, welcome to Building Relationships.
Hi, Dr. Chapman. It's great to be here.
First, let me just say this. I have a sense that this book is more than just a book to you. It's more like a love letter to your grandparents. Is that true?
Oh, it's definitely more than a book. I would say it's a love letter to my grandparents. It's in remembrance of them. But, you know, it's really a love letter to all the older people out there, especially the older adults that I've worked with previously in my career. You know, my hope is that I want younger people to read it, but I want older people to see the title of the book and just to be encouraged by it, because I think they just kind of need, you know, a little encouragement or a lot more encouragement to realize how much value they truly have.
Yeah. Well, tell us about your family and the home you grew up in and what it was like.
I was born here in the U.S. My parents were immigrants from China and Hong Kong, and I lived with my parents, my two older sisters and I, and my paternal grandparents. So in Cantonese, I call them Mama and Ye Ye, and they really helped to take care of us when my parents were at work. So my parents both worked full-time. You know, they walked me to school. They were there after school. They were there pretty much for everything. When I learned how to play the trumpet, they had to bear with, you know, the beginnings of that. You know, they were just there for everything. So they saw us do projects, and I lived with them for such a long time. So until I was 26, literally when I got married, that's when I moved out.
So your grandparents were a vital part of your growing up.
Yeah, they were there all the time. So that's my normal.
I find that a lot of people are scared about growing older. You know, they have these visions of what might happen to them along the line. And what do you say to people who have those kind of fears?
Well, I think realistically, we all know that aging is hard. But I think that we have this idea that the older we get, the less attractive, the less capable, the less valuable that we are. And I don't think that's the truth at all. I have friends who are turning 30 or 40 and they're running away. They are kicking and screaming into the next decade. And I just want to encourage them by helping them to see that as you age, that's a gift. To be able to live long age, that's a gift. And there's so much growth with each day that God gives us, with each additional day that we get. We grow in so many ways.
The word shame comes up quite a bit in your book. Why is it that many of us have become ashamed of our age instead of acknowledging it?
Just look at the way that we talk about old age. You know, I hear people who are in their 20s and 30s, and really people at all age, and they joke around and they say things like, I'm getting old. I mean, you hear it everywhere, right? So I have to stop myself sometimes because, you know, it really is ingrained in our society and we all say it. But if you think about it, when we say something like that, we never mean it as a good thing. So if you look at how lucrative the anti-aging industry is, or you think about how offended people are if someone describes themselves as old, like if I ask somebody how old they are, or if somebody said you look older than your age, oh boy, you would get in a lot of trouble. You know, I have older adults that I've worked with, seniors, who tell me, you know, you don't want to hang out with an old guy like me. Or when I ask them for advice, they'll tell me, you don't want to get old. And so I think we are just all ashamed because this is deeply ingrained into society. And this is the way we think of old age, that it's almost a curse, you know?
Hmm. You know, when my wife turned 80, some of her friends said, are you going to tell people that you're 80? And she said, yes, yes, I'm glad to be alive. She had cancer 7 years ago, and she's a survivor, and she's glad to be alive. I mean, that really should be our attitude, right? We've been greatly blessed to be this old.
It is so true, yeah.
That's counter to what many in our culture feel. So,
what I hear you saying then is, well, it's coming from both sides. The older people are a little reticent, you know, because they are older, and the younger people are not looking forward to getting older. So we're getting this pressure from both sides, right?
Yeah, and I think that's how bad it has gotten, to the point that, you know, a lot of older adults, they don't see any more point in living because they really believe that almost like you hit a certain age and there's nothing you can do to contribute to society. There's no good left, you know? And so that's why I was really passionate about writing this book. And I had this huge urgency. I have three young kids. They were 1, 3, and 5 when I started writing this. And I feel like this is a very urgent matter because people are living their lives, older adults, and they are just not seeing that each day that they have is a gift. And I think as young adults, we're not seeing that we need to value them and remind them how valuable they are.
Yeah, well, I certainly concur with that. I think there's so much to be offered from older adults, and that's why I think this book is going to have a tremendous impact on those who will take time to read it. Isabel, you talk about how our society is increasingly sensitive toward racism, sexism, other social injustices, but at the same time, we seem to be okay with belittling or putting down the older generation. Why are we being selective?
Well, I think if you think about it, you know, we become more aware of what we say and more sensitive towards certain groups or certain situations that people are going through when someone steps up, or more so when someone speaks up and confronts us about those negative attitudes. So, for example, if someone says something demeaning towards women, who's going to speak up? One and all over the world are going to speak up, and, you know, they're going to be offended, and people will know that what they said was not acceptable. It was offensive, you know, it's hurtful. And the thing with older adults is that with time, older adults, they grow weaker, they grow more frail, and so they don't have a voice. You know, I remember one time in particular, I was visiting an elderly man, and he was probably in his 90s. He was known for being one of the most pleasant residents at this assisted living home. And a hospice nurse had come to visit him, and I was there as well. So he was sitting at the dining room table, and he was trying to say something. We pulled up a chair, and we got closer to listen. And his voice was really faint. He He was mouthing words, but every single word that came out of his mouth was garbled. He was trying to say something, but literally we could not understand what he was saying. And it was sad. You know, when it comes to older adults, sometimes literally they do not have a voice, especially near the end of life. But other times, I really believe that as a society, we don't have ears to listen. I think we're too busy to listen. And so there are many times we devalue older adults in our words, in our actions. Sometimes they speak up and we don't listen. And eventually it comes to the point where they don't speak up at all because they know that no one's listening, or maybe they feel that nobody cares to listen. So we have gotten to this point where even older adults are ashamed of being older.
What do you think we could encourage older adults to do? Particularly, I'm thinking now about their grandchildren. You know, you mentioned that you grew up in a home where your grandparents were there. They were a big part of your life. Of course, many children grow up in homes where their grandparents are not in their home and really not close to them. They might live, you know, across the country somewhere. What can we say to grandparents, for example, who have grandchildren who did not, you know, grow up with them or weren't very close to them? Or how about the grandchildren? What can they do to build a more positive relationship and glean from their grandparents?
Well, so I'd say to the grandparent, it's tough sometimes because when you're reaching out to younger people, whether it's children or, you know, middle schoolers, high schoolers, college age, young adults, whatever age, younger people tend to be busy. And so I get the sense that a lot of older people, you know, grandparents, they don't want to get in the way, and they sense that everyone around who is younger is busy. I would say, remember that you can be such an encouragement to a younger person. And in this world where we are just so busy all the time, even if you don't get that feedback where a young adult is showing appreciation, continue to encourage them. You know, send them notes, leave them phone messages, email them, ask them how they're doing. Because with time, I think you will get response. I think you will start to see that they appreciate your interest in them. Because like I said, we're in this time where we could all use more attention, more time from people. People are stuck on their phones. I have neighbors who, you know, we don't see each other because we're just rushing in and out of our houses. But the advantage of older adults is they have time, and they have time for us. So to remember, you know, how valuable your time can be and your encouragement can be to grandchildren. On the flip side, I would say if you're a grandchild, when I was in my 20s, I had this realization that changed completely how I treated my grandparents. So I grew up living with my grandparents, but I can't say I always appreciated them. And what changed that was I was going to a lot of send-offs for my friends who were moving away for grad school, or they were, you know, moving away because of a relationship. There's a lot of moving. And so I realized that my grandparents, they need a send-off. You know, so at these parties, we would, you know, all bring lots of food. We would celebrate the time that, you know, my friend had spent, you know, in our church or in our community. And then we would give them a time to share their favorite memories. And then at the end, we often would pray for them. And just kind of that would make them feel special, help them feel confident as they were going on to their next place, whatever state they were going to, maybe overseas. But, you know, our grandparents, they are in such a need of a send-off. And I realize that through, you know, the way that I treat them, that shows them that they are special. That helps them because there's a lot of fear as somebody gets older, as they near the end of life, because even if somebody knows where they're going, even if they're a believer, it can still be scary. So to know that it is, I think it's a divine assignment from God that we have as grandchildren to love our grandparents.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that come to my mind is if those of us who have children still at home could teach our children how to ask questions of their grandparents. Because, you know, grandparents have a lot to share, but they don't necessarily just share it, you know. But if grandchildren ask questions, they'll talk. So I think for parents who are listening, I just would really encourage them to think in terms of building that into the lives of their grandchildren, of asking questions of their grandparents.
So I would say in terms of helping our kids, if you're a parent, to help them develop a relationship with their grandchildren are the best to do that. And so even during the whole coronavirus outbreak, what I've been doing, my kids are young. I've been teaching them how to use a phone, punching in the numbers. I encourage them to call their grandmas, so my mother-in-law and my mom. And then I teach them how to start a conversation, and I have them ask them a question. And I think during this time when people have been staying home a lot, it's a really great opportunity for us to prompt our children and teach our children, you know, to value their grandparents, but also just to see that their grandparents have such great stories to tell, and it's about their history. So yeah. I think it can be a really exciting activity.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. You know, your mission for a long time, and in this book, it's coming out very clearly, is to help elderly people in our country feel valued. And we're talking about some of the ways to do that now when you talk about teaching our children to call the grandparents or to call, you know, elderly folks. But what are practical ways in our society as a whole that we can do that will communicate value to older adults?
Well, I think I mentioned it earlier, but it all comes down to giving them a proper send-off. So whether you have a grandparent, whether you have an older parent, whether it's an older neighbor or somebody in your church who is elderly, we can value older people the same way that we would value somebody our age. You know, we acknowledge them, we spend time with them, we listen to them, we ask them questions. You know, I like to say that when you ask them, you honor them. And that's something that older adults, the ministry of presence and the ministry of listening is something they so very need, especially when they don't feel like they have a voice. So just taking the time to slow down, listen to them, listen to their needs, and serve them, you know, in terms of practical ways, offering help. You know, I don't think it's rude to offer help. They can always, you know, decline, but just so that they know that there are people around them to support them makes a huge difference. And I call it, you know, building a village. So let our elderly parents, our elderly grandparents, let them know that they have a village supporting them, that they are not alone. I think that's so important.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the coronavirus. During all of that, in the middle of all of that, my wife started calling the widows in our church and just saying, you know, how are you processing all of this? You know, just giving them a chance to talk. And so many of them have come back and said, you know, how much that meant to them that somebody outside their family would call them. So I think we fail to understand how powerful it is when we reach out to an older adult and just inquire, you know, how are they doing with life?
I would say even more if you're not related to somebody, sometimes it does mean more. I think that older adults could use unpaid visitors and friends, you know, and when you're not related, it's almost like you're not obligated to do it. So in yeah. some ways, it can mean even more.
I noticed that throughout your book, you give evidence of the love languages, you know, hugs and words and gifts and those kind of things. Let me ask you this. When you were growing up, the love language concept wasn't there probably for your parents or grandparents, but did you feel love by the way they expressed love to you, both your parents and grandparents?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so blessed because I grew up with loving parents and I grew up with loving grandparents. And I was the youngest of the family, so I think in many ways I, you know, got more hugs and snuggles. I got more gifts. I got a little more attention in that way. But, you know, yes, definitely. I would say that the love they gave me came through different way, you know, in different forms. When you have grandparents in the home, on top of parents, on top of loving parents, I think that can help younger children and even, you know, as they're growing older, it can help kids to develop a greater resilience for the difficult things in life. So for me, I think it gave me an extra layer of love and attention that really helped me as I had to face different hardships. So when I got rejected at school, it was okay because I knew I had, you know, two sets of adults who loved me. And I think that makes such a difference.
Yeah. Now, you call the elderly an untapped resource. Tell us more about that. You mentioned it briefly earlier, but tell us more about that.
Well, I've been blessed to know and serve many older adults. And what I realized after many years of being around them and serving them and working in that field is that every older person is an expert at something. So, you know, yes, an older person may have, you know, they may have 50 years of experience in marriage to glean from. But if you think about it, somebody who's 80, they also have experience in many other things. So if Mr. Smith is 80 and he's been reading for over 70 years, he can tell me the best books out there. If he's been fixing cars for 60 years, then he can tell me what's wrong with my car if he hears a funky sound. You know, anybody basically with time becomes better at something. And so I think, especially as a believer, I really value having older believers around me. So I go to community Bible study, and it's, you know, my group encompasses all ages, and I lean in a little bit more when somebody who's 85 in my group shares, because I know that, you know, they have a really strong, grounded faith, and they have such a testimony to tell. So I think, you know, there's a lot of things we think of having older adults around us. We say that that's valuable because they have wisdom, but I think there's more. They are experts in many things, and they just have so much experience to share with us.
Isabel, do you think that you've written this book and this is kind of your life mission to honor the older people in your life? Is that because of what you experienced when you're young and in one sense you kind of didn't appreciate it at the time?
I think it's because I benefited from it, and as I look back, I see how valuable it was. And what really changed me, I would say, is working in a field with so many more older adults. So, you know, a lot of people, they only have interaction with their grandparents, and that's what they know about older people. But I was exposed to a lot of older adults. So what I say is I think our stereotype, our negative stereotype of older adults has developed because a lot of people are basing it off of a really limited sample size, maybe two grandparents, maybe four grandparents. And having met and worked with so many older adults, you know, they have blessed me in so many ways. And I see that people don't understand. There's this gap in understanding. So I've always been told that it's unique for a younger person to work with older adults. People think I'm strange, and that's how I know that they don't see the value in working and serving older adults. I took the GREs when I wanted to go to grad school. I got my master's in public health, and the first time I took it, I didn't pass. The second time I took it, at the time I was working in the fitness center at a senior retirement community. The second time I took it, instead of just studying in our office when I had time, I thought it would be a good idea to go out and talk, make conversation with some of the residents and ask them different words that I was studying. So vocab and the writing portion was actually harder for me. And so I would ask them, what does this word mean? And they'd be walking on the treadmill at the same time. They'd give me a definition that actually, you know, made more sense to me. It was something that I could remember much easier than the definition in the book. Then I would ask them to make a sentence out of it. And so I actually did that as I was studying for my GREs. And the next time I took it, I passed. And so that's just one small example of how I feel like I have benefited from the experience of older adults and also their love towards younger people. I think they actually are very willing to help out younger people and mentor and encourage them. And so I want younger people to see that there is not only an untapped resource, but we have cheerleaders there if we are, you know, if we are able to slow down and reach out to develop that relationship with an older person.
This is Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. We're talking with Isabel Thom today, author of The Value of Wrinkles, A Young Perspective on How Loving the Old Will Change Your Life. You can find out more at 5lovelanguages.com.
And if you go to that site today, you'll see information about a date night at home. So before we get back to the conversation with Isabel, Gary, in the last few weeks, you've had to cancel a lot of events. So this is a way to connect with couples. Tell me more about the date night at home coming up May 7th.
Well, I'm excited about it, Chris, because as you say, yes, I've canceled a whole lot of things in the last 2 months. But yeah, this is an opportunity for people to attend an event that's going to be extremely practical and helpful. And what I'm going to address basically is the two essentials to long-term healthy marriages. And if you get these two things right, chances are you're on the road to a long-term healthy marriage. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I've done this to live audiences many times and very excited about doing this. Well, this audience is live, too. It's just
That's right. <laughs> They're
not in my presence, okay? So, yeah, if they'll go to fivelovelanguages.com, you can register there. It's a very small price, and hopefully we'll have huge dividends in your marriage.
And it'll be at 8 o'clock local time, so wherever you are in the country, at 8 o'clock you'll attend this. Again, go to fivelovelanguages.com. It's an experience designed to strengthen and deepen your relationship without leaving home. And boy, Gary, there are a lot of people who have been kind of cooped up together for the last few weeks. This might be a real breath of fresh air, I think.
Well, I think so, Chris. I'm looking forward to it, and I think those who join us will have not only fun, but I think they'll learn some things, practical things that will enrich their marriage.
Just go to fivelovelanguages.com. Find out more about the date night at home coming up May 7th. You can register right there, fivelovelanguages.com.
Isabel, you say that who we are today, whatever our age, if we're not older, whoever we are today will determine the person we're going to be when we get older. So how can those of who are listening today who are younger, maybe in their 30s or 40s, how can they prepare now to become the person they want to be when they get older?
Well, I can't tell the future, but I'll just tell you that if I'm driving down the highway and I live in the D.C. area and someone cuts me off and is honking furiously, I don't usually react and beat back at them. I let them go, and I actually feel sorry for them because I can almost guess what kind of person they're going to be when they're older, and that sounds horrible. But how can I tell? Well, if you talk to enough older people and if you get the chance to learn about their past, then you'll notice that they weren't all that different back then when they were younger than they are now. So I think, you know, we really need to cultivate our character. We need to develop good habits now. We need to practice who we want to be later on. When you're younger, you can couch and ignore things, and for a short period of time, it's not going to affect you, but it truly comes back to you later on. And so I think it's important in our younger years, if you're struggling with something or maybe unable to forgive someone, it's for our own good to take it seriously. In working in the senior care field, I feel like I've gotten a long-term perspective. Like, I get to see what happens when you don't forgive, when you don't take care of certain problems that you have or try to mend and resolve certain relationships. In my young age, it was a reminder to me that, you know, we can pray and ask God to help us with those areas, to take it seriously and to seek counsel and work through some of the struggles that we have now, because it will help us to be the person that we want to be in old age.
You know, Isabel, I hope that young adults who are listening really hear what you just said. Because if we don't deal with those issues, those fractured relationships, or the rejection we may have felt from others, if we don't deal with that in those early years, it's going to follow us into our old age. Oh, man, that was so powerful.
No one wants to be that grumpy old man. I mean, that's a stereotype, and not every person is a grumpy old man. But if you truly are serious about not wanting to be a grumpy old person, then you have to work it out now, because you can't change behavior in a day. You can't expect that you'll turn 85 and all of a sudden be cheery and bright and grateful for your life. And that is also, you know, it also relates to your lifestyle. And if you are taking your health seriously, if you don't take it seriously now, what makes you think that when you turn 85 that you are going to, you know, take a walk every day and do the things that are healthy for you?
Yeah. Now let's flip that, and let's say let's look at it from the young adult's perspective. So your grandfather was not a very loving person, or your grandmother was not a very loving person, and now you're thrown into maybe taking care of them, or at least you interface with them, and you really don't even enjoy being with them because they are so negative. What might that young adult do to have a better relationship with, let's say, the grumpy old grandfather, or our grandmother for that matter?
Well, my first piece of advice is to think of yourself as an investigator. So before you approach someone who's difficult, you really need to try and understand why they're difficult, and with older adults to really dig deeper. So I think people, all of us as humans, are complicated enough, right? But something that I've learned from working in the senior care field is that as someone ages, there are a lot of things going on physically inside, but also emotionally that affect older adults. And so I think we need to remember that. So, you know, because I grew up in an multi-generational household, and I wrote this book and I developed a great appreciation for older adults, plenty of people assume, even friends, you know, assume that everyone in our family, particularly grandparents, were all just such pleasant people and we all just got along. And that was so not the case. You know, I was the youngest in my family. And as a child, I'll say that, you know, I was oblivious to a lot of the family dynamics, particularly between my parents and my grandparents. But by the time I reached middle and high school, I caught on pretty quickly. And I realized that even though my grandpa, he had a sweet spot for me, he was actually really hard to get along with. So just an example of his strong personality, at 97, he had a stroke. And I was on my honeymoon at the time when I found out about this. He refused to go to the hospital. Once we got into the hospital, he refused to go to rehab, and he demanded that he was going to go home. And we finally got him to rehab. We got calls from the nurses asking us to tell him to listen. So they would say, he can't go to the bathroom himself. It's dangerous. And they would ask us to tell him that. But, you know, he was a fighter. So it was exhausting for our family to care for him because he was so demanding and strong-willed. And during that time, what really helped me, something that convicted me, is I was driving in the car and I heard the song, I believe it was sung by Laura Story, Mighty to Save. And you just listen to the first line. And I always remember hearing that. And she sings, "Everyone needs compassion, a love that's never failing." And it reminded me that to just have compassion on my grandfather. Yes, it was hard. When you're in the thick of it, it is difficult. And a lot of times you have to step back. But just think of just a very basic thing, as in sleep deprivation. Sleep deprivation occurs in about 50% of older adults. And, you know, I'm a mom of three young kids. Even last night, I didn't sleep so well, so I kind of woke up grumpy. You know, the things that are going on inside older adults, it can lead to negative behavior a lot of times. So everything from loss to physical changes that's going on inside them, having to ask for help, feeling alone, there's just so much going on inside. And it's actually very interesting. And as an investigator, as a grandchild, as an adult child, when you take the time to step back, it helps you have more of a compassion for what they're going through, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, one of the things I hear you saying in terms of trying to repair or trying to relate to an older adult who may have a negative framework on life is maybe to play the role of a counselor. And that is ask questions.
Yeah.
You know, that's the counselor's job, is to ask questions. And many times, even an older adult with a negative orientation to life, if you start asking them questions about their past and about their job and about their parents and about their childhood, you will discover some things that perhaps influence them that to be who they are. And the very fact that you're showing interest in them by asking those questions is building a relationship with them, because you're not just talking surface talk. You're not just talking sports or even church, but you're talking about their life and showing interest in them. So, yeah, that's a tremendous approach to trying to have a better relationship with older adults who may, as I said, have a negative orientation to life.
Any person, any caregiver, I think the right approach is always to develop a relationship. Sometimes we get so busy into doing the logistics, making sure we get the paperwork and driving them to the doctors and appointments and everything like that, that the older person can still feel very alone and unloved because they haven't felt heard. Nobody's listening to them or asking them questions. So I think whether you have someone who is difficult or not difficult, one of the best ways we can serve the elderly is to listen to them, and we love them in that way. And it also makes it easier for us to serve them because they're more likely to communicate with us and tell us their needs.
You know, Isabel, a lot of our listeners are in what we typically call the sandwich generation. That is, they've got young children at home, and yet they have responsibility to be looking out for elderly parents. And so they're pulled in two directions. You know, they want to be good parents to their children, and yet they feel responsible somewhat to deal with the elderly. What do you say to those who are in that situation?
Well, I have a couple of things to say, and I would say, number one, remember that just like raising your kids is meaningful work, loving and caring for aging parents is meaningful, and it's noble work too. So in the end, you are not going to regret it. I am a PK, I'm a pastor's kid, and I've worked with seniors and worked in end-of-life care, and so I have gone to a lot of funerals in general. Even while I was writing this book, two of the seniors that I interviewed for this book, they passed. And in going to so many funerals, this is what I see. I see a lot of pain and guilt from adult children. The most pain and honestly the loudest wails are from the ones who they regret not having spent time with their parents, not showing their parents that they love them, and not caring for them, not investing time and effort into doing this. And so, yes, it's really hard when you have to care for the needs of young children. And, you know, even if it's teenagers and the elderly, that's hard, but it is noble work. Secondly, I would say involve your kids. And there's a really important reason why we should do that. And that's something that I'm working on as a mom of young kids is when we involve our kids in taking care of their grandparents. And when I say taking in care of them, I mean blessing and teaching them to honor their grandparents. What they do is they see their grandparents' age and they start to gain a compassion and awareness for people who are not like them. So a lot of people sometimes worry about their kids. A lot of parents worry about their kids being entitled. Well, sometimes we can't take them, you know, to a third world country to show them how much they have. But if they're around older adults, they see that there are people health-wise aren't as fortunate as they are. And this is character building. This is what I call character building. The second reason why you want to involve your kids is they can help make caregiving easier for you as the adult child being in the sandwich generation. And I am so passionate about this because I think this is why my grandparents had such a good quality of life for so many years. My parents, they taught us how to take part in caregiving. And grandchildren, I would say, have a superpower. So you just look at all the grandparents who are just gushing over their grandchildren. You know, they're googly-eyed. They're trying to show you 500 pictures on Facebook of their grandchildren. And grandchildren have a soft spot in their grandparents' lives. And as they get older, they can take part in helping their grandparents. So I was the one who drove my grandparents to the store. They actually felt more comfortable asking me because they didn't want to burden my parents. When it came down to it, you know, my grandpa, in my book, I talk about how he was fairly difficult and demanding. Well, he was 97 and he refused to sign a power of attorney form because I think he felt like there just wasn't that trust. He was just very scared and fearful at that time. Well, it came down to the time when my dad was like, he needs to sign this. He had a stroke and we needed him to sign that form. I was the one who approached him, and he ended up signing his power of attorney form because I took part in approaching him, and he was just much softer and much more willing to listen. Yeah. And so I say grandchildren, use that superpower. Like, I want to start a revolution among grandchildren because especially as you become, you know, in high school, in college, as in your 20s, 20-year-olds are so capable. We are innovative and creative, and we have energy. And so, you know, just like we think about going overseas to do Peace Corps and all these different things, you know, why not take part in blessing our grandparents? That's such noble work. So I really want to encourage parents to prompt their children, get them involved. Yes, they might not be genuine in the beginning, but when you prompt them and teach them and guide them to just notice their grandparents, to find small ways to help, you know, they can start helping to pick up pieces, maybe not all the paperwork and to be primary caregivers, but they can help and they can make caregiving a lot easier and a lot more pleasant. So that's something to remember.
Yeah, I really like the idea of involving your children in your ministry to your parents or sometimes even to the grandparents. And a lot depends on, of course, how old the children are, what they're capable of doing, and whether geographically the children are around. You know, when my mom got old, and my mom lived to be 99, but as she got older, my children didn't even live in the same state with me or my mother. But I made sure that my two grown children knew what I was doing for my mother. Because in the early and later years, I had to have sitters with her around the clock because I didn't live in the town where she did either. And then I would go down every week. I would drive down, and as long as she was able, take her out to lunch and spend the whole afternoon with her. And I made sure my grown children knew what I was doing, because I thought someday I might be in Mama's situation.
Exactly.
I want them to have a model.
You're setting an example. So even if your parent is difficult, serve them, love them, because your children are watching. And yeah, when it comes time for you, you know, as you get older and need help, they will help you. For me, you know, my dad, he died a few years earlier than his mother, who lived to 102. And my sisters and I, one of the reasons why we were so involved in caring for my grandma is because we did it out of love for my dad. We wanted to make sure that my grandma was well taken care of because we knew that my dad loved her. And that's also why we were so passionate about caring for him and being available and willing to help him in whatever ways we could. So you are definitely setting an example for your children, for the younger generation, when you serve your older adults and you take it as, you know, I would say a divine assignment.
Elizabeth, our time is almost gone, but why don't you just give us a summary statement of what this book is all about and what you're really trying to communicate to people?
So I would say to remember that having an older adult in your life is such a gift. So let's give our older family members, our friends, let's give them a proper send-off. Let's use our youth, and youth could mean 20, 30, 50, 60. Let's use our youth and our energy and our muscle to bless these folks who have such a story to tell, who have so much to bless us back with. And, you know, when we do that, I think we will be so glad. We will be blessed in return.
Well, Isabel, thank you for spending time with us today, and thank you for taking the time and effort to write this book, because I believe it's going to help a lot of people come to old age with far fewer regrets if we make some changes in the early and middle years of our life. So thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chapman.
What a great perspective at such an important time in our country and an important time for the church. If you've enjoyed the conversation with Isabel Thom, you can read more in her book, The Value of Wrinkles, a young perspective on how loving the old will change your life. Just go to 5lovelanguages.com to find out more. And while you're there, check out the Date Night at Home with Dr. Gary Chapman coming up May 7th at 8 p.m. local time. Go to 5lovelanguages.com to register right there for Date Night at Home.
And next week, are your core needs being met? Dr. Kathy Cook will tell us what those needs are and what to do if they're not being met.
That's 1 week from today. A big thank you to our production team, Steve Wick and Janice Todd. Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman is a production of Moody Radio in Chicago in association with Moody Publishers, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks for listening.